Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast. And the thing I'm going to talk about today is the early days of Harry Truman's presidency, the dropping of the atomic bomb, and the beginnings of the Cold War. And that transition from Roosevelt's diplomacy to Truman's. Harry Truman had had one of the shortest vice presidencies in US history. He was made vice president in 1945. Roosevelt's existing vice president that year, Henry Wallace, was very popular amongst the party, but it was suspected that he would be less popular among the electorate. Wallace was very friendly to the labour unions and came from the left of the party. And this was seen as a potential liability, something that could be used against the Democrats in the next election. The reason perhaps why this would have been more of a liability going into 1945 was the gradual beginnings of a change in popular opinion. Towards America's wartime relationship with the Soviet Union. Long before you get to anything like the Red Scares of the later 1940s, long before you get to any of the first diplomatic confrontations of the kind of the emergent Cold War, there is a gradual shift in public and media opinion and political opinion in America, as far as the wartime alliance with the Soviet Union goes. And this might be based on the fact that the war against Nazi Germany appeared to be all but won. And it might be based around the fact that there were had been many compromises with the Soviet Union thus far, and that a further appeasement of Soviet demands was becoming increasingly unpopular as a concept. Truman, on the contrary, was a very different character altogether. He was from the South. He'd been born in Missouri in 1884 from a hard-working Irish-American family. He had served in the First World War as an artillery captain. He'd served on the Western Front. And he'd been a small businessman during the post-war slump after the war. He'd had his own small haberdashery business. He had worked his way up through the Kansas City Democratic machine and had become a senator in 1934. And 10 years later, he received the nomination from the Democrat Party to be Roosevelt's running mate in the 1944 presidential election. And it shows you the kind of the level of manoeuvring that was happening at the time that Truman hadn't actively sought the nomination at all, but wins with a landslide within the Democrat Party of 90%. Wallace is completely defeated and swept aside, largely because he represents a position too far to the left for the party. And Roosevelt's declining health was no secret. It was well understood throughout the Democrat Party that the president was dying. There was a sense of immense urgency to find a suitable vice presidential candidate who would step into the president's shoes when he passed away, and Wallace was not seen as that man. The coming confrontation that seemed to be likely with the Soviet Union also meant that you needed a candidate on the right, at least on the centre-right anyway. And Truman was ideal for this purpose. In the normal run of American politics, the office of vice president is a backwater. It's a ceremonial role. It is one that, as I mentioned in a previous podcast, Lyndon Johnson, during Kennedy's administration, found immensely frustrating and suffocating and quite depressing almost. And Truman does comparatively little in the office of vice president. He doesn't even attend any of the wartime conferences that are on at that period. So he doesn't go to Yalta. And he actually only sees Roosevelt on his own on two occasions. He's not briefed on Yalta. He's not briefed on what has been discussed privately with Stalin and Churchill. And he has nothing but media appearances. So he goes to fundraisers for war bonds and is photographed with glamorous movie stars and that kind of thing. But nothing of substance really takes place. When Roosevelt dies, Truman is escorted by the Secret Service to the White House. There he goes to the president's private quarters, and he's met by Eleanor Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt's widow, and she says to him, supposedly, "Is there anything we can do for you, Harry? For you are the one in trouble now." One of the first conversations that Truman has is with Henry Stimson, who draws him to one side and says that there is something immensely important that he needs to know about. And, of course, this is the existence of the atomic bomb. Truman has no knowledge about it until this point. It was the first he'd heard of it, or the Manhattan Project, or anything. Truman's problem is that he knows nothing about foreign affairs. Roosevelt had grown up really with diplomacy in his blood. Roosevelt was kind of the closest that one has to an American aristocrat. He had travelled the world as a young man. He had been introduced to heads of state and really knew the art of interacting with foreign dignitaries extremely well, whereas Truman didn't. And he comes to power just weeks before the first conference of the United Nations is due. This is a kind of very difficult time, and you have a new president that doesn't particularly strike his contemporaries at the time as a presidential figure, or at least a particularly statesman-like figure. One obstacle to overcome in these circumstances when one is succeeding a great and charismatic figure like Roosevelt is the fact that a great deal of the world's focus, or the world's attention, was on the recently deceased president himself. The world leaders such as Churchill and Stalin were both particularly saddened to see Roosevelt go. Stalin believed that Roosevelt would make a great partner for him. The two would dominate and run world affairs for decades to come. And Stalin, by all accounts, though this seems difficult to believe, is genuinely very saddened to hear of his passing. He viewed him as a kind of a wartime contemporary and partner. Truman also has to step into a number of difficult scenarios. For example, in his first week in office, he was speaking with the American ambassador to the Soviet Union, Avril Harriman, on how to deal with the kind of confused and conflicting messages coming out of Moscow. He met with the American Zionist Emergency Council about the discoveries of the Nazi concentration camps and what impact this would have on the hopes by American Zionists of emigration to Palestine. He was also dealing with the final stages of the war, the complex interactions between Western and Soviet armies in Germany in the last months of the war meant that he still had to be in command of the knowledge of military movements, things that he'd never really had any grasp of previously. So because of all these reasons, it seems to be very difficult for Truman initially to place his stamp on the White House, as a new president obviously must. And the first indication that a new style of presidency and a new style of diplomacy is being introduced comes with a meeting between Harry Truman and Vyacheslav Molotov, Stalin's foreign minister. Molotov had arrived in Washington on the 22nd of April, and he had come to meet the new president. I think Stalin had probably sent him to sound things out and to see what the situation was going to be like. They'd met, they discussed the course of the war over dinner, and that they had Truman had also confirmed that he would stick by Roosevelt's commitments that were discussed at Yalta for territory in the Far East, territorial concessions in the Far East following a Soviet entry into the war against Japan. The next day, the atmosphere is very different, and Molotov is summoned to see the president, and he discusses Poland. Poland was something that Roosevelt wasn't that bothered by. Roosevelt thought that if he discussed Poland with Stalin, it would derail the plans for a United Nations after the war, and that Poland was a sacrifice worth making in order to make sure the UN happened. Well, Truman is not... Truman obviously was an enthusiast for the United Nations and believed that it was a...
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
An organisation that should develop from the war, but he was not willing to simply ignore Soviet behaviour in Poland. He said that it was very disappointing that the Soviet Union had not discussed with the discussed the future of Poland with the exiled Polish government based in London. The Soviets recognised the Lublin Poles, the communist Polish government in exile, not the London Poles, who were the organisers of the Polish Free Army. And the Truman reminds Molotov that all three powers, Britain, America and the Soviet Union, had made commitments at Yalta, and each of them had to stick to what they had promised. Molotov is angry. Molotov turns very grey, apparently, at this moment. He does not expect an American president to speak to him like this, and is quite taken aback. And he says that the Soviet Union was committed to cooperating with America. He said, you know, previously the three powers seemed to work very well together and by treating each other as equals. But now, does this sound to me like Britain and the USA are ganging up to impose their views on the USSR? So is a familiar trick of Molotov's to portray the Soviet Union as the victim, not the aggressor? Truman has none of it. Truman shuts Molotov down and says, that is everything, no further discussions. Please convey my views to Marshal Stalin. And the conversation ends there, far frostier than anything Roosevelt would have said to Molotov. And the Soviet and American interpreters are kind of in part aghast, but the Americans are in many ways exhilarated, amongst Truman's staff, there is a feeling that thankfully the appeasement of the Soviet Union is now going to come to an end. So is this one of the first moments of the Cold War? This conversation on the 22nd of April between Molotov and Truman. Entirely possibly it could be traced to this moment where the Roosevelt era of relations with the Soviet Union come to an end. The Roosevelt era of willing to give Soviets the benefit of the doubt and to see the Soviets as being far more than really they were comes to an end at this point. And there is a widespread feeling amongst the administration that this is entirely justified and entirely necessary. Truman attended the Potsdam conference, and while he was at the conference, when he was there on July the 16th, he heard that the final test of the atomic bomb had been successful, and now it was a weapon that was ready to use. Stalin, obviously, due to his infiltration of the Manhattan Project, was well aware of the atomic bomb, of its existence. When Truman says to Stalin, you know, we have this weapon of unusual power, Stalin's words were, well, I hope the US uses it, puts it to good use. And the response that he gives Truman at the time, it's a surprise to Truman, but obviously it makes sense with hindsight that obviously he knew all about the weapon, and he actually knew more about it than Truman did. He had known about it long before Truman had known. The Japanese government refused the surrender demands that were laid out at Potsdam of an unconditional surrender. And the plans for a invasion of mainland Japan, which had been drawn up for at least a year, were going to be set into motion. The losses that the US Marine Corps incurred on Okinawa and Iwo Jima were thought to be minimal in comparison with the perhaps close to a million US deaths that would be involved in a fight to occupy all of Japan. And the addition to that was the belief, probably well justified, that even if the Japanese army surrendered, that the Japanese populace in general would continue fighting any kind of occupation. The outlook for invading Japan was that it would take a year. And it would be probably electorally unsustainable, and therefore these views influenced Truman in the dropping of the atomic bombs. They also influence him. The other things that influence him are a desire perhaps to showcase American military power to the Soviets. And the knowledge that of the atomic bomb is, according to Tony Judd and Anthony Beaver and Robert Gallatly, one of the few things that prevents a Soviet invasion of Western Europe. Certainly Stalin was giving serious thought to sending Soviet armies into France and Italy by the end of the Second World War. And this would easily have swept British and American armies aside and resulted in an evacuation back to Britain. So the Hiroshima was bombed on the 6th of August and Nagasaki on the 9th, and Japan surrenders on the 10th. Logic that Truman put forward about the defeat of Japan and the use of the atomic bombs. There's something slightly disingenuous about it, I think. He presented it in terms of, cold statistics, and yet he seems to have been terrifically excited and by the dropping of the atomic bombs, he called it, and I paraphrase, the greatest event in all of history. Though he does say it was done to save 125,000 youngsters on the American side and 125,000 on the Japanese side from getting killed, and that's what it did. It probably also saved 500,000 youngsters on both sides from being maimed for life. I wonder if when given the option of using an atomic weapon, something happens to the mentality of presidents. But perhaps we shall never know. So I think there's a lot to learn from this period of a few weeks, from April to August, or a few months from April to August 1945. And from Truman's role in it. Certainly there is a change in attitude, but I feel that change in attitude was on the way anyway. What Truman represents is a shift in opinion towards the Soviet Union that wasn't just limited to Truman himself, but was widespread amongst the diplomatic elites in Washington and widespread amongst Roosevelt's government. And the feeling that there had been too much cooperation with the Soviets, too much concession with the Soviets, and too much friendship with the Soviets continues, not just under Roosevelt, but under Eisenhower too. And the later on, the belief that there are still many Soviet sympathisers within the State Department, it becomes one of the real pillars of the Red Scare. So there is this cultural change happening, and Truman, perhaps because he was less experienced, perhaps because he was not the figure that Roosevelt was, the more worldly, more reflective, more sanguine figure that Roosevelt was, perhaps for that reason he was more willing to lay out clearly with the Soviets where their boundaries lay. And finally, perhaps what Truman was doing was what all new presidents do, and he was stamping his authority on the White House and on the administration, and showing that policy under him, particularly towards the Soviet Union, was going to go in a markedly different direction. Anyway, you can find out all about these and other mysteries of American diplomatic history in Mr. Tyrell Eskelson's brilliant new ebook, The American Century, which is coming out as an explaining history title very soon. That'll be something I'll be mentioning to you further. Just remains for me to say, well, hopefully we'll squeeze another one of these in before Christmas, but if not, have a really, really lovely festive season. I'll be trying to do a kind of a history books review of the year sometime next week. But we're nearly close to 70,000 subscribers now. So guys, thank you all for your support, your kind emails, your words of wisdom and wit. Greatly, greatly appreciated. And I look forward to more history, more historical discussion in 2016. Take care. All the best. Bye-bye.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.